Welcome to Nintendo Dads, episode 178, recorded on May 3rd, 2018. On tonight's episode, we discuss reception to Donkey Kong Tropical Freeze being released on the Switch, and there's leaks on leaks on leaks on leaks from Super Mario Odyssey, Kirby Star Allies, and so much more we're going to talk about on tonight's show. Zach, cue that sweet music.
Everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Nintendo Dads Podcast. My name is Zach Erickson, and tonight is May the 3rd, 2018. People are going to be getting this, and guess what, Marty? May the 4th be with you.
Ah, and also with you.
Oh, I hate that. It's the worst holiday. Speaking of the worst holiday, joining us tonight from, you know what, I already talked to Marty. Marty from the land of the south. What's going on, dude?
I'm good. We're sitting here on the precipice of a new Donkey Kong game releasing, and Justin Masson is not with us.
Well, that's why, I think, is that he's...
I think he's in bed right now preparing his body for Donkey Kong.
Yeah, I think so too. Joining us as well, king of VGTribune.com from high upon his throne, Jesse Waldeck. What's going on, Jesse?
Well, if he gets releases at midnight his time like we do, he could have been playing it 4 hours ago.
Yeah. Wow. You know what's weird?
Again, where do you think he is?
I just had the weirdest, like, this is what happens when you go on the eShop right at midnight Eastern. In the coming soon area is Donkey Kong Country Tropical Freeze. And when I go to it, it says I can purchase it from the coming soon area. This is the darkest timeline. That's what
I just realized.
It was available for pre-purchase anyway, wasn't it?
Look.
No. It says I can just buy it right now and download it immediately.
It's on my Switch.
That's amazing.
Yay!
Thank you everybody for listening to Nintendo Dads. So that's something that just is out right now, everyone. Go and check it out, and you can watch the show while you play it. And of course, and remember why the Wii U had actually really good games. Right on, everybody. So this is the Nintendo Dash Show, and we are going to talk about some Nintendo stuff, and I'm looking forward to it. It's been a while since I've been able to do this, which is always, you know, life, man. Life has been catching up, and I can't do this as much as I like to. But I'm excited to be here tonight, everybody, and that we will get right into our news.
Do it.
And the news is brought to you by patreon.com/NintendoDads, where for as little as a dollar a month, you guys can support the show. You can enable this nonsense, you know? Like, you can... Is enable the word I'm looking for? Probably not. You sure enablers, you. This is your fault. So thank you so much to all of our patrons. Marty, what's the news on the Patreon front?
So here's the deal, guys. We are standing on the edge of about to give away another $50 in eShop credits to one of our patrons.
This is madness.
It is madness, is it not? But this is what we do because we love you and we're thankful for you. I'm checking right now as we speak, our patrons. And here's the thing. We are looking for new patrons. We're looking for you to sign up. If you're a longtime listener of the show and you have not jumped on the Patreon train, you could still do that. And even for just a dollar a month, you can be entered to win that $50 in the eShop credit every month, or you can join one of the other tiers and get cool things like access to our private Discord chat where we have some awesome Nintendo and other discussion. I mean, we're in there like, guys, craziness. I know Nintendo Dads talking about God of War, talking about other stuff. I mean, there's good stuff going on in there, and we're thankful for that.
I forget who it was, but someone reluctantly asked, can we get a God of War channel? We're like, sure, do it.
Yeah, we'll do it. That's what we do. We just say do it and it appears.
Thank you, Tim.
We appreciate it. But then, like, you know, $15, you get entered into a monthly merch giveaway. there's all kinds of stuff going on over there, guys. It's fantastic. We're thankful that we get to be a part of that and go back and bless our community. And so thank you from the bottom of our heart. And you can go find that over at patreon.com/NintendoDads.
Yeah. And when somebody asks, whose fault is this? You can triumphantly say it's my fault. So
yeah,
absolutely. Right on. Well, I got some thing in my throat. What's going on here?
Zach, I feel like that should be a shirt, by the way. Can you get on designing that? Patreon exclusive backer shirt, Nintendo Dads. It's my fault. Write it down.
Oh my gosh, dude. That's genius. Right on. So, so what we've got going on tonight, guys, we got some news, right? We got some stuff. I know we're what, 2 weeks out from Labo now?
Oh yeah.
I don't know if we want to do this in what we've been playing area. Maybe I'll do it then. But yeah.
Yeah, let's talk about Labo then, because I was going to say some stuff about it, but that might be a good place.
Yeah. Okay, so we'll do that there. But yeah, so what do we got in the news here today, guys? My notes are not loading as quickly as I would like.
Okay, so let's talk about a couple of things, a couple of big stories that came out this week. Nintendo announced sometime this week that Mii character creation is now coming soon to web browsers.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. You'll soon be able to create Mii characters on your laptop, desktop, phone, or tablet. All you need is, a web browser. And they specifically listed Google Chrome, Safari, Firefox, and Edge being able to be supported. And I believe this will most likely be... Really? What?
Who uses Edge, really?
Yeah, really. Who does? So this is the original report on this came from a website that I never heard of, JapaneseNintendo.com.
Wow.
It was put kind of circled around. It came through NintendoEverything.com, My Nintendo News. So I can only assume it's legit. But guys, here's my thing. Like, I think this is a big story, actually, and the reason for that is, you know, Nintendo has been pretty quiet on Miis since the Switch launched, and especially with Miiverse going away. But now, all of a sudden, we're hearing rumblings of the online service being revealed, right?
Not Miitopia, was it?
And we're hearing hearing the rumblings of this happening. Yeah. My question is like, do you think they're connected? Do you think that maybe Miis are going to play a larger role in Nintendo's upcoming online service, or is this just a way to keep Miis alive? Since, as Jesse said,
Miitopia's the 3DS game.
Yeah,
I can't, I can't imagine that Nintendo would put this like just as a web app. They're going to require that you log into your Nintendo account. You know what I mean?
Oh, sure.
Like it's all going to be server side kept on there. I can't imagine that it wouldn't be that way. So I don't know.
I'm wondering what the point is. It's got to be some use for them down the road.
Yeah. I think
that's what I'm saying. Like, why keep it alive?
Smash.
Oh, yeah. Please. No.
No, I think why keep it alive? Because it's endearing and creative and, I don't know. I think that's,
but I mean, is it not safe to say that Miis have like the Wii launched and then you can make your Mii and it was a big deal, right? And they did a ton of stuff with it. They did the Everybody Votes channel and they did, you could put it in Mario Kart and you could put it in different games and, it showed up everywhere and you can interact with them. You can even like go and download new Miis, from the Mii channel, or what was it called? You know what I'm talking about. Like you could go in and you could see people's Miis and download that to your console.
Yeah, like Mii Plaza, Mii Parade, something.
Something like that. And then then it was a big deal. They brought them over to the 3DS. And then it was a big deal. They brought them over to the Wii U. And then
Weekend Rental chat says Mii Tinder.
Mii Tinder. Yeah. Oh, that's no, please. That's a terrible idea. But think about it, like, They've de-emphasized them to the point of irrelevance. And like when it started out, it was a really cool idea. It was really novel. And like it fit Miis and Wii, but I don't see Nintendo letting something that was a cool novel idea that everybody associates with Nintendo consoles. I don't see them letting that just slip through their fingers. And
yeah, I think it's
like,
just
we're never going to touch that again.
I think that they are just, they're just one of the little things on there that's just endearing enough. Like I'm like on my Switch right now, and my kids have a bunch of random weird characters with red hair and sunglasses and like bright pink lips, you know. Oh wait, that's my avatar. No. Just kidding. but like, you know what I mean? Like they, my kids have just gone in and made a bunch of characters in here and they just enjoy doing that. Yeah, I don't know if it's necessarily there for the same, I don't know if it's appealing to the same audience anymore. But that doesn't mean it's not appealing to somebody. So
I just wonder if it maybe is a catch-all too for people who made a Miitomo account or made a mobile account with Nintendo, but don't have Nintendo software or hardware other than, you know, mobile games. And this is how they customize their My Nintendo account, right? It's a way of getting around needing to own a Switch or a 3DS.
Yeah. Well, and I imagine at this point, then it's easier to have a website than to maintain a mobile app, right? Like,
right.
And so I imagine that that's another reason why they do that. And they just connect it to, I mean, you could very easily in the Nintendo Switch app, you could have a little area that links to the website or it's an embedded browser or something like that. So I imagine we'll see that kind of thing too.
Well, this article also mentions that the ability to do this will be available from late May. So by that point, Nintendo will have revealed something on its online service, which we found out this week. Also that, you know, we're going to hear something in early May. They're supposedly going to update the website and there's going to be details about. Yeah, I would say probably next week.
Probably by the time we release this episode, frankly.
Well, that's actually why I went and refreshed the page right now, just because Nintendo has a habit of doing that, like 9 o'clock on a Thursday night, time to drop some news.
Yeah, exactly.
Here's a new 2DS XL. Yeah.
I don't remember how I got the Mii built on my Wii U. It might have been imported from something else, but I think the last Mii I actually remember making was when I got the 3DS, or it took a picture of myself and it kind of made a, I think this is what you look like, and then I kind of do some hand tweaks. Other than that, I really haven't been I haven't played with it in years.
You got to be careful about those hand tweaks, though. Let me tell you. I don't know what that means. So that's what other what else is going on with this? And so, like, are we? So we're actually thinking like they need. I'm skeptical that they're gonna show off their online stuff. Like maybe they will, but I've been in such like managing my own expectations mode for so long with Nintendo that. That maybe I'm skeptical because of that. I don't know.
Yeah. I don't think we're going to get, again, high hopes, low expectations. Yeah. I don't think we're going to get all that much of details on it. I think they're going to give you the bare minimum until they have to give you something else, which is what Nintendo does a lot, right?
That's what they always do.
So We're going to get a launch window. We're not going to get a launch date, and we're going to get maybe a little bit of detail on voice chat and different things like that. And then we're going to get maybe some details on whatever the retro game thing is, right?
Yeah.
And I think that may be just about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I know that's pretty vague, but seriously, like how much I really want, if you're sitting there and listening to this and you're thinking about online service, ask yourself this question. Legitimately, how much do you think they're going to give you? Don't ask the question, how much do you want them to give you? How much do you think they're going to give you? And then take that and lower it by about half.
Yeah. Yeah, seriously, well, because that is I'm, you know, there's been so much talk about this online service, quote unquote. And I think that even giving it that name of like online service is just setting people up for disappointment, because I think it's going to be literally like, here's your friends list here. Like, don't anybody out there who's expecting a party system or, you know, anything like that, just be prepared for disappointment if that's what you're wanting, because there's no way that that's happening. I at this point am basically prepared for, we will have an update to the app, right? And they will continue with the plan that they've already said that they have, which is use the app to do voice chat. And otherwise, and by the way, now you have to pay for it, which makes me think maybe there will be some additional features in there. But I don't necessarily think that they're going to move away from the plan that they already have.
Right.
So.
Right. And think about this, like in managing your expectations too. Think about this: a year of Xbox Live and a year of PlayStation Plus is roughly $60 each, right?
Yeah.
Yep.
Nintendo's is going to cost $20 a year.
Yeah, and it's going to include the classics, the updated classics collection.
Well, right. that's what they said. Before doesn't necessarily mean that that's set in stone. I still have a feeling it might creep up to 30-ish, but just because they can.
But even if it does, creep
up, I think they're still advertising it.
To be honest, that's still an awesome price on Xbox Live and on PlayStation Plus, and that's maybe what Nintendo gives you.
Yeah,
maybe.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, I want it to be great. Don't get me wrong. I want it to just...
I'd prefer if it sucked. No, just kidding.
Blow my socks off.
Yeah.
I mean, none of us is going to sit here and be like, well, I hope it fails, but...
Well, think about how, like, Xbox One and PS4 work. You know, you normally have one console in a house, so you have one account that has the premium product. Once that does, other accounts can still use it. Mm-hmm. In this case... especially in the multi-switch household, you know, that is going to be only, the subscription is only going to be tied to the one account console. So if brother and sister wanted it too, they're going to have to buy their own. So we're still going to be spending $60 a year or $90 a year.
That's depending not, on how much it ends wait. There is no way they're going to make you spend more than $20 per system per year. Wait, is that what you're saying? That if you want,
there's very much a way.
There is I'm saying
I don't think it's going to be sharing of the service like the other two allow, just mainly because it's one console in a household.
That's what I'm saying.
One console per player.
That's what I'm saying is that like if I have to pay $20 for my son to play online on his account, that is highway robbery. Well,
maybe one system with multiple accounts, maybe they might find a way to do it.
That's what I'm saying. Oh yeah, your case is different. Oh, I don't care.
We have three systems. Two switches in my house.
No one shares. If I want it, it'll be mine. My daughter wants it, she has to buy her own. If her brother wants it, he has to buy his own.
Right.
Yep.
Yeah.
Welcome to the new normal.
Sorry, I was under the impression that you were saying that per account per system.
No, I was talking about with a one system per person model, which is kind of where they kind of want to go, you know, just like a 3DS.
Right. Yeah. Having said that, they also make room for 8 different profiles on each Switch, and you can only have one profile on a 3DS. So I think that they're flexible that way. So
we'll still see how it all pans out at the end.
Yeah, for sure. Next up here, the Donkey Kong Country disappeared from the Wii U eShop, then reappeared. Tell me about this. What's going on?
So earlier this week, eagle-eyed fans noticed that in preparation, what seemed like preparation for Donkey Kong Tropical Freeze to release on the Switch, that Nintendo delisted it from the Wii U eShop, where it was $19.99 for the Nintendo Selects version. And whether it was a glitch or whether it was due to criticism leveled at Nintendo from fans, later on this week, it mysteriously reappeared the same way that it disappeared with no fanfare. Excuse me. No warning whatsoever. It just happened. And so this obviously drew outrage, right, from fans.
Oh, outrage.
Who took to Twitter and IGN forums and all kinds of other places to talk about how horrible Nintendo is because they waited for 4 years to buy a game, and then all of a sudden It's not there for them to buy anymore.
Yeah.
And yeah. I'm sorry if that sounds harsh.
Oh, no.
But it's not honestly, all the people who were upset about this being like, it's delisted. I know I never bought it, but it's been delisted. Well, buddy, why? Why didn't you buy it?
Marty, do you want
to... The game came out. I went back and I did some research today. This game launched in March of 2014.
Here's the deal. Is I don't think that the people who get outraged about things like that are really outraged at that. I think they're just looking for things to be angry about. You know what I mean? Like,
you said it.
I really don't think there is any... I don't think there's any other explanation for this. I think because you're right, because it does not affect them in this situation. Like, yes, I can understand why people would be, you know, like on principle, if that's what you want to do. But
if Nintendo, now here's the thing. Here's where it's different. Nintendo announces Donkey Kong Tropical Freeze for the Switch and immediately pulls it from the Wii U eShop.
Yeah.
That's different. Right.
Yeah.
But here it's just, it really felt like, man, I was really looking for something to gripe about this week, and here it is.
Here's the thing though. Like I think that both sides of this argument, like I don't want to come across basically, I'm looking at Josh Nintendo Beyond in the chat room basically like, "Whoa, you guys are defending Nintendo," and I'm like, "Well, I don't think that Nintendo taking it off the Wii U eShop is the right move either, because if you own a Wii Shop in 2018 or a Wii U in 2018, I think that alone there's like a loyalty reward there of like, yeah, you know what, we'll let you buy it for $20, why not, right? Like I think that's,
I'm sure you can still find discs for free, you know, for new for $20 out, but there too,
but Zach,
if you still look, really want it.
Let me push on that a little bit, and here's what I mean when I say that.
Okay.
I was telling you, this game came out in 2014. For right. 2 years, it was $49.99.
Right.
So it wasn't even a full $60 game. For 2 years, it was regular price and actually went down and was pretty well, you know, you could find it pretty easily used if you wanted to. And then 2 years into the life cycle of the game, it became a Nintendo Selects where it sat at $20 for 2 years.
Yeah.
And so I don't buy it when somebody was like, I can't believe I can't buy it for $20 anymore. Well, why didn't you buy it for those 2 years?
True. Yeah, true. You know? But
and so I'm not really, like, I'm not defending them delisting it from the shop.
Mm-hmm.
And it could just be a glitch. Who knows?
Yeah.
But the thing is what I am defending is the fact that Nintendo is sitting on a gold mine with the Switch right now. Why wouldn't you move one of the best games on the Wii U over there and sell it for full price on your hotcake selling system, right?
True. I think
it makes sense.
I think that, you know, there is an argument to be made that this game may be a little bit, if they were selling it for $50 on the Wii U and then down to $20, it has never been a full $60 game until it made its way to the Switch. And I don't think Funky Kong is worth $10 either. You know what I mean? Like, so that I think,
no, I don't either.
And so like, I definitely do, appreciate that argument that, that this game is a little bit overpriced. If that's actually what's going on. I didn't realize that it was only $50 on the Wii U.
My point is that despite what it costs on the Switch, the witch hunt against Nintendo over it being delisted is absolutely bogus.
I think it's a little bit, I think that again, there are legitimate criticisms to be made, but having said that, I guess my criticism, I might even take heat for this, but my criticism is not, or my problem is not with what the criticism is. It is I highly doubt that the majority of the people who are upset about this online actually, that those criticisms are from those people,
are you saying that you highly doubt that the criticism is real criticism it's just bandwagon?
I think that there are people out there, a few people out there who are genuinely upset because they have a thoughtful argument. And then there are a lot of people who are butthurt and just want to find something to be angry on the internet about. And those people just jump on the bandwagon.
Congratulations, Zach.
That's the internet, man.
You just described Reddit.
That's just the whole internet, man. Yeah.
And so, like, but here's the thing. Like, I said this earlier today, and I will stand by it. And I, again, as you said, I might catch heat for this. If you are one of the people who is complaining about Tropical Freeze being $60 on the Switch, and you didn't buy it any time in the 4 years that it was out for the Wii U, you're part of the problem.
Here's the thing, though. Here's the thing about
because that. Because it sold just over a million.
So imagine, though, Marty, if you were one of the people who actually did buy this game at full price on the Wii U and paid $50 for it, and like, man, I kind of like that game. I'd totally pay $50 again. Wait, it's $60 now. What? This game is like several years old. And all, you know what I mean? Like, for those people, I totally understand that.
It's like $10 a monkey.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is.
And then you add in $10 for the levels.
I didn't think about that one, what you're going
to. $10 a monkey. Yeah. And then you add in $10 for the levels. I get that. Okay. I guess what I'm trying to say is, like, people who sat there and went, well, I'll buy it later. Well, I'll buy it later. I'll buy it when it goes on sale. Okay. It's on sale. I'll buy it. I still don't want to buy it, you know.
Yeah,
I don't know. I don't have a lot of sympathy, I guess. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
And I guess I don't have a lot of sympathy because I bought this on credit because I had a bunch of eShop credit.
Here's another thing.
And I spent $12 on it. So
Josh in the chat also says this. He says, look at it this way. Hyrule Warriors on Switch is $60, but it comes with all the DLC, which, by the way, is like DLC from, I think if you would have bought all the DLC on both the Wii U version and the 3DS version, which the Switch version comes with, it would have cost like probably close to $50 just for the DLC.
Yeah.
That game is $60.
$24.99 actually.
Yeah. And then Donkey Kong Country Tropical Freeze has no genuine new content and it's $40 more than it costs on Wii U right now. So, I mean, like, absolutely, it is a very high priced, it is an overpriced game, I think, on the Switch. I think that's a justified statement. But you know what? I don't know. It's I think the people are gonna they're gonna vote with their wallet, which is maybe a lazy argument, but it's late and I'm tired and I don't want to
here's what I think is gonna happen. Remember when the Switch launched and everybody's like Mario Kart 8 Deluxe is just a lazy port. And then guess where Mario Kart 8 Deluxe is right now? It's still in top three, you know, sellers in some regions.
Yeah.
Well, and again, I don't know that Donkey Kong will do that, but I would bet that it more than doubles what it sold on the Wii U.
Here's another alternate argument for this is that
it's alternate reality.
Yeah,
you have the reality stone.
Is that it was underpriced before. It was undervalued, and this is a correction, right? Maybe that's another way of saying.
Here's another thing too, Zach. This is going to be a separate news item, but I think this would be a good place to talk about this. I don't think it was just undervalued. I think it was under-reviewed because a lot of people, you know, are making the argument, and it's a good argument. I think that it has legs to stand on that this is just the same game with only Funky Kong added, right? Easy mode, basically. If so, why is it reviewing in some places 3 to 4 points higher than it did when it came out on the Wii U? Case in point, IGN's review of Donkey Kong Tropical Freeze on the Wii U was a 6. For the Switch, 9.
Hmm.
So is it undervalued money-wise or is it undervalued review-wise?
Yeah, that's...
Because it seems like everywhere I'm looking, it's reviewed better on almost every media outlet.
Wait,
this
they
time
gave this game
when it came out on the Wii U.
They gave it a 6 last time.
They gave it a 6.
That's just criminal, dude. That's nuts.
They gave it a 6.
Yeah, that's crazy talk. There's no way that game is worth a 6. All right. Well, hey, any other thoughts on this? I don't know. If you want it, here's the thing: if you want it, it's going to be worth it to you. If not, don't get it. You don't have to get it. It's fine.
Yeah.
You know,
nobody's forcing you to buy Donkey Kong.
Yeah, but
and look, there's no argument to be made. There's absolutely, and I don't want to hear it. The argument of, well, if I don't buy Nintendo's first party games, there's nothing to play. Oh my gosh.
No, that's not
true. Go to the eShop and buy some indies.
Go and buy. What was the game? I know you're excited to get. What was the shovelware that came out this week? There's some good shovelware this week.
Hang on, go buy Jesse's game.
Project it Construction. 70
cents.
Project Construction, the simulation.
We'll talk about that later.
Yeah.
Construction simulator.
No. It's not the simulator. The simulator series has gone far enough that it is being ripped off. It is Professional Construction, the simulation. So that's.
Well, no, what was the other one? Don't Die, Mr. Robot DX. There you
go. Okay, so IGN did give Donkey Kong Country Tropical Freeze a 9 on Wii U, is what's going on.
No, on Wii U?
On Wii U, that's what it says. That's what, yeah.
Okay, I misread it earlier. We've got an actually. And
we
got to
fact check ourselves.
Don't get me wrong.
We got to fact check. Yeah, they did. Yeah, it was a 9 out of 10. Fact check. That we're good.
Well, thank you.
That's okay. You know what? Hey, you know what? Everyone at home.
GameSpot or game.
Somebody.
I don't know. I did see the similar stat. I just don't remember who did it.
Yeah.
Sweet. Well, like I said, thanks.
Right on. Okay. Well, having said that, what is next here on the show? On here. Actually, you know what? Why don't you guys talk about this? I got to actually quickly run for a second, and I will be right back. So why don't you guys start talking about this next story?
Speaking of running.
Let's do that. Speaking of running, our favorite plumber voice actor, Charles Martinet, will be a playable character in Runner 3, confirmed today. Jesse, where did this is your story. You put this in. Where did you see this?
Yeah, this was in a tweet by Totally Choice. I'm looking at it again. Not sure how he's associated with the game, but he posted, "No longer content to watch from the sidelines, the narrator has decided to take matters into his own hands or feet." Because he was the narrator of Runner 2.
Awesome.
So I'm presuming he's still the narrator of Runner 3.
Oh yeah, yeah. That I think that was said from the beginning. So,
yeah.
What?
Yeah, because in Runner 2, at least he introduced himself as his real name. This is Charles Martinet, and this is Runner 2. Blah 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 blah. I forget the subtitle.
Gotcha. If you go and you'll search around on any Nintendo site, there's a neat little picture of him that shows you what he's going to look like in the game. This is kind of an odd choice. This is kind of like playing as Stan Lee in the Marvel games, you know, like the Lego Marvel games.
That sounds like a fair comparison.
It's kind of like, I don't really understand why they put this in here, but I'm sure somebody will totally freak out about it. And it's a cool little homage to him. I think that, you know, he's been behind the scenes in video games for a long time. Voice acting, narrating, doing different things, and now he gets to play. He gets to be the character. What would really be funny is if they had, like, Mario voicing Charles Martinet. Is it in Runner 3? There you go. It's Inception. It's Inception. Speaking of Mario, we'll go ahead and move on while we're waiting for Zach. Mario Odyssey was data mined over the past week. Since the brand new update that added the Topper costume, Topper being one of the Brutals with the top hat. And, you know, I didn't even know those guys had names until I finished the game. I just thought they were the Brutals. And you have to go in and you have to read those pamphlets, you know, that make up the map and everything.
Right.
But anyway, so somebody decided to go in and data mine the rest of the costumes that are going to be available via updates for a while. So if you don't want spoilers on this, you probably want to go forward about 2 or 3 minutes in the podcast right now, and maybe even just keep going because we're going to talk about some Kirby Star Allies data mines here for just a minute. But they found out that Topper's not going to be the only one of the Brutals to lend their costume to Mario. So spoiler warning, this is it. Harriet, Rango, and Spewert are the other Brutals, and there will be a costume for each of those. There are confirmed graphics that have been released on Twitter and other Nintendo sites that have shown these. including some other long rumored outfits that have been supposedly coming for a while, a baseball uniform, a conductor uniform, a racing outfit, a Santa outfit, and most interestingly to me, an 8-bit Mario outfit that is kind of like the Mario 64 outfit, but it turns him into like a pixelated 3D Mario, kind of like the Amiibo, and zombie Mario.
That's something I want to go back for, is to get that 8-bit Mario.
Yeah, it's going to be cool. It's kind of in official Mario colors, but you know, it's not like the Super Mario Brothers 8-bit where he's kind of like puke green and red. But the other one is, I think this is so super interesting. Zombie Mario is the last one. Mario in this costume has an axe sticking out of his head.
Where is that? All of these costumes, you know, he's been in advertisements or in a game, but where in the past? But where did this one come from? Do we know?
I don't know.
This one just seems like out of place.
Mario's never been Santa either. And True. So I'm thinking that possibly these are seasonal costumes that keep Super Mario Odyssey fresh through this year. So there may be a Halloween promotion, you know, that has something to do with Zombie Mario, and there'll be a Christmas promotion that has something to do with Santa Mario.
So the conductor uniform would be from Wii Music?
Oh, gosh. Please, no. Yeah. But yeah, it's from Wii Music. That's exactly what it's from. Baseball, of course, is an homage and a callback to the sports games. One thing that I thought was interesting is that we heard recently, you know, that there was one of the developers, Japanese developers, was actually working for a time on a title for either the DS or the 3DS called Mario Motors. And racing outfit.
That was the place that I bought my Civic.
Mario Motors.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. They're
gave you a good deal.
Yeah, they had good financing. You know, it was pretty good.
But anyway, like on the racing outfit that's been leaked, there's like Mario Motors logos. So that's kind of cool. Callback to Zach. I don't know if you're familiar, since you're just getting to come back. If you're familiar with the leak that came out this week of the new Mario Odyssey costumes?
Yeah, some of them, right? Like
Zombie Mario and all the other brutal, like one of them's out right now, but the three other brutal costumes, conductor uniform, 8-bit Mario outfit that's going to function like the Mario 64 outfit, and Santa outfit. But sadly, one thing I learned tonight in doing a little bit of research for this to kind of bring it up on the show is, that's long been rumored that there was I think somebody found confirmed, like text files or something that were used in the game, that there would be a Link costume that would be released for Odyssey, and it has been removed.
All of the
data that was for that has now been removed with the last update, which kind of sucks. I would have really enjoyed seeing that.
Yeah, seriously.
But, you know, somebody like, you know, like one thing you kind of got to ask is, are they removing it because they just don't want to do it? Or are they removing it because it's part of something later on? I don't know. It would really be cool if you could go to
Hyrule. Even if they thought that they might use it in the future, I wouldn't think they would remove it just to put it back in. They probably would have just kept it in and then just have it.
Right. And it may have been those odd files that were just to throw people off. I don't know. But thank you, data miners, for ruining the rest of the updates to Mario Odyssey. But also thank you to Nintendo for giving us freaking zombie Mario with an axe sticking out of his head. That's fantastic.
I feel like I heard it, but I didn't see them.
Okay. Let me pull up something right here.
When he throws Cappy, is he throwing just the axe, or is he actually throwing his own head?
You know, if he's throwing his own head, then you just started something. Because now, like, I want that costume right now.
Yeah, or just like the top of his scalp, you know, like literally just like.
And his little Mario brains bouncing around in there as he runs.
Yeah, like the top of the skull, you know, the whole deal.
Why? Look, you guys, we have now gone down a road
Listen, what's the movie? What was that TV show? Did you ever watch Heroes with Siler? Yes. Where he'd like
Siler Mario. That's people right. Scalps off and eats their brain.
He like cuts the top of their head off. That's exactly what it is. That's what I want.
Great.
Right on. Great. Okay, so
go Google it, Zach, because like there's some really cool images. Okay. That you'll see there. I mean, and you can tell this is not like, to me, I don't know, like it doesn't look like something a fan did, but I could be wrong. And multiple sites have taken it and run with it. So I feel like it's kind of,
it should be real if it's not, is what you're saying.
Right. In other data mining news, Kirby Star Allies has also been data mined for the identities of remaining Dream Friends, which appear to include two more waves that are coming soon. Again, if you don't want these to be spoiled, you probably want to go forward about 5 minutes. All right. So wave two, of course, wave one, if we go back, was Gooey and Marks and the animal trio from Kirby's Dream Land 2, right? Like Rick and the fish and the owl, Koo and Kind. That's it. Wave two.
Impressed. Good.
Wave two, which there's no release date on these yet. Adeline, DeRoach, and Dark Meta Knight will be added. Of course, Adeline is from Kirby 64 and also in Kirby's Dream Land 3. She is, if you've done any of the photos on, or, you know, the puzzles on Kirby Star Allies, like one of the very first ones that you complete is of a girl who is drawing, you know, different things. She's like got black short hair. That's Adeline. DeRoach is like the main boss mouse from Kirby Squeak Squad. And Dark Meta Knight is just Meta Knight with a notch out of his mask, like a scar on his mask. I don't know. Wave three, though, this is the one that really I think people are most excited about. Kind of wave three is going to be Magalore, who is like the guy that you help get his ship back up and running in Kirby's Return to Dreamland on the Wii. Taranza, who is the kind of puppet evil boss guy from Kirby Triple Deluxe. Susie, who is from Planet Robobot, and the three mages that are in the game before you fight Hynes. So, God, I can't think of their names right now because they're weird. But you know what I'm talking about. Zach, you've played it, right? The fire and the water and the electric mages that you have to fight in Star Allies.
I haven't finished it yet. My son probably does, but I haven't finished it yet.
Yeah. So I'm having a Zach Erickson moment.
That's what that is, huh?
I'm sorry.
You're good.
Francesca is one of them. Flamberger and I'm totally blanking on the last one. Like the one who is the lightning, like her name. Oh, Zan Partizan. Because you know that's easy to remember.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Francisca, Flamberger, and Zan Partizan will be the last, or may not be the last. They may just be what got data mined. But those are coming, which means they'll be added in the Dream Palace in the single player or the storyline part of the game. And there'll also be characters that you can play through in the different modes of the game, like the boss rush and other things where you can actually just control, you know, somebody other than Kirby. And, you know, right now we've got DDD, Meta Knight, Waddle Dee, Rick Kind and Koo, Marks, and Gooey, which means that, like, by the time all this is over, this is like the ultimate Kirby universe intersection game. You know.
Mm-hmm.
So, do we need to pause right here?
No, you're good. I'm just going to need the recording from YouTube, is all.
Okay, cool. Jesse, why don't you talk about these last two little bits of news, and then we'll move on to some games that we've been playing.
Yeah, so I don't think it's in the official release of Steam yet, but at least it in the latest beta build. is official support for the Nintendo Switch Pro Controller, including gyro controls for, you know, games that have it supported, which I don't imagine would be many yet, since they don't. I imagine that'd have to be built into certain games. But I just thought that was kind of cool. And, you know, I saw.
Well, and like the graphic of the Switch's controller is actually showing up in Steam now, too, right?
Yeah. And it's used for like for configuration. You can kind of remap buttons, I imagine. You know, I haven't tried it for myself, but this is what I just saw.
That's pretty cool. I mean, that's already working for other consoles, right?
Yeah. I mean, you talk about like PS4 controllers working for Steam.
Right.
Yeah. And I know that works because when I was playing Persona 5 last year, I did a lot of the end game from my PC using the PS4 remote. And every time I pushed the PS button to go back to that home screen to like to shut the PS4 down, it would also activate Steam. Steam would want to do stuff at the same time. And if I accidentally pushed the PS button twice, now I have Steam in big picture mode, which is just god awful on a PC.
So, gotcha.
So it's
just gives people another option, right?
Yeah, another option, which is never bad. Then, speaking about bad options. Well, that remains to be seen. But the Atari VCS it was announced the other day that they're going to do pre-orders starting on May 30th via Indiegogo at an early bird price of about $200. So I'm still like, maybe, you know, most likely, but, you know, it's not a definite yes. It just depends on what the funding looks like for me. But because this does, you know, have interest for me, because I grew up playing Intellivision and Atari. So
right.
I'm curious about what this thing's going to be. But the things I'm worried about is, you know, they say that's the early bird price, which means the official MSRP is probably going to be more, which they haven't announced. And they made a reference that the controller and the classic joystick will also be available. Like, so does that mean that the console doesn't come with one, or is this just that we can buy extras? That isn't clear yet either. So probably won't be until May 30th.
Yeah, see, like, I have a hard time trusting Atari's track record.
Well, the Atari today is different than what Atari was in the late 80s and 90s when they, you know, burned their name down to the ground.
Well, like, I'm just afraid that, like, this is going to be another Jaguar. And you're going to end up getting a controller with, like, number buttons.
Or another Ouya.
Oh, yeah. And so, like, for people who are listening that don't know what this is, it's basically Atari's take on NES Classic, right?
Kind of, yeah. It's basically a Linux box. So it's a Linux machine that plugs into your TV, and they say you can put it into Linux desktop mode and do whatever you would do with a Linux machine. It has USB and Bluetooth, so you can add keyboards, mouse, headsets, and do what you would do with a computer.
It also has preloaded games.
Yeah, it does have preloaded games. They say about or at least 100 classic Atari games. I imagine some additional will be available for purchase later. I don't think they were very clear on that either. I don't know if these also include third parties like the original, like from the Activision run, or if these are purely in-house games.
I was reading about this earlier today, and it also said there would be a selection of modern games as well.
I think that's part of the list. The if you can run it on Linux, it'll work mode.
Right. I just like, I'm kind of struggling to, and I mean, like, I grew up as a Nintendo guy, but I had a Sega Genesis, and I had a TurboGrafx-16, and I had eventually had a PlayStation, right? and an Xbox. So I've branched out to all, but I've always struggled to see the appeal of an Atari. And I guess it's because those just came around before I was into video games.
That's probably true, because you know, the Atari was pretty much like the first one out there. I think they, I don't remember when the VCS was new, but Pong was like 76 or 77, like in the arcades. Right. So they go pretty deep, you know. And then Mattel started with the Intellivision, I think in 79 in limited markets, and then 80 nationwide. So I think the Atari VCS was the original Atari VCS. You know, the original name for Atari 2600 is VCS. So they're reusing the VCS name for this new system. That's cool. Just, you know, I guess a book out of Microsoft's handbook. You know, it's Xbox One. Which one? The original one or the new one?
So this is probably something that is mainly going to attract retro collectors, enthusiasts, nostalgia junkies, yeah, different things like
people like me, you know, pretty much. Yeah.
But can't you already I don't know. I keep asking questions because I'm pretty ignorant about it. And I'll admit that. Can't you already play most of these games on a web browser?
Yeah. And there's emulators out there. In fact, I have several Atari 2600 games on my modded NES Classic.
Right.
So, you know, the ability to play these games are out there, you know, depending on how legal you want to go. You know, at least this is this turns into a legitimate way to play these old games. You don't have to worry about the piracy.
Why aren't you playing DK? Because we're recording a show. Thanks, Kevin.
Yeah.
So, you know, I know there are a lot of people who are against piracy and will do what they can to pay for the games that they want to pay for. So this is a way to do it, to play the old Atari games again.
But
again, if you're into that scene, the piracy scene, I'm sure it's, you know, that's been an option for 30 years.
Marty, Jesse, I was in Walmart a few days ago. Is there already something kind of like this already out on the market? Because
they've had Atari flashbacks. I think there's like 7 or 8 different generations.
Because
of them.
They were on the shelves at Walmart and I hadn't seen them before. And they were like, it looked like an old Atari, right?
Yeah. Those are like the NES Classic where, you know, the games are packed in, but you can't do anything else with it, mm-hmm, other than just play what's in it. And I think those usually have AV inputs, so it's not going to be HD, where the Atari VCS will have HDMI.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. That makes sense. Alrighty.
So I like the NES Classic. I mean, you can play those games on a modern TV without, you know, an HDMI hookup, but they look like junk.
Mm. Right. Especially if you stretch the image to 16:9. Those, they look awful.
Right.
Right. Okay.
So Zach, just a couple of real quick things here before we get done.
Yeah.
Death Road to Canada. We talked about that last week about how the publisher had delayed that due to what had gone on up in Canada.
That's right. Yeah.
They have now set a new release date for the game, which is going to be May 8th. And it will also be at a 20% discount for the first 2 weeks. I have had a very significant time with this game. I can't say anything until the day of release, but I will say this. Do not sleep on this game. If you are a fan of roguelikes, if you are a fan of zombie genre games, or if you just like this game is as if the zombie genre of games and Oregon Trail had a baby.
Yeah. Which, by the way,
it's fantastic, and it has an awesome sense of humor. But it is very, I mean, like when you get down to it, it's tough. I have not made it to Canada on a single run. Like you have to drive in game for like 15 days, and I have not been able to get, I got like within 3 days of Canada, mm-hmm, on one of my first runs, and I have not been able to get back to that since.
Hmm. Yeah.
But it's super, like, it's funny because, like, you're playing and, like, you know, it doesn't take itself seriously at all. So, like, your character will be like, the way they move, they're these little blocky characters that kind of look like tiny High Rise or whatever that app was. They did an offshoot of Tiny Death Star.
Tiny Tower.
On iOS.
Tiny Tower.
That's it. Yeah. And they bop around the screen, you know, and there's this really cheerful music. It's like, but you're getting like chased by zombies.
Nice.
And you're cutting them up with a pixelated chainsaw and stuff. So I can't, we'll have a video up on release day. Go check that out. If you still have questions,
I'm going
to try to do like a full run through from beginning to end.
What's the release date now?
Canada.
What's the release date now?
May 8th.
Yeah.
So
this coming Tuesday.
And like, not to make light of the tragedy at all, but can you imagine a worse name for your game
I totally get why they did it.
Like, wow. They had no choice, really. That was
No. And they did absolutely the right thing. And, you know, you look at that. I mean, that's commendable for a developer who could have, who quite frankly, they missed out on profit.
Well, I think long-term,
I'm not saying they would profit from the tragedy. I'm saying they missed out on weeks that game could have been available.
Again, I think people could have very justifiably, well, you know, they could have boycotted the game very, very easily.
I
mean? Whereas if they wait, I think they actually probably stand to make more money by waiting. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes earlier isn't always a guaranteed better thing. So,
yep.
So yeah.
Also, Luminace Remastered has now slipped in date, like a lot of other Switch games are doing right now. It was originally planned to be spring 2018. It is now, they announced it's been delayed now until June 26th of this year. So still, I guess it just misses a spring window. It's like early summer.
Yeah.
Now
it misses spring by 1 week.
Oh, wow. So yeah.
June 21st ish is usually when the first,
when
summer starts.
You know what though? Yeah. When they say spring, what they really mean is Q2, which is till the end of June. Like, I think they say spring, but that is just a way of saying Q2. You know,
right?
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like that's basically what it is.
It's weird that they use both notations.
We just advocate for the world to just shift to that instead of like, oh yeah, weird, like the 21st. What if summer just started July 1st? That would make way more sense. I'm just gonna,
it would make way more
sense. Let's start a petition.
Not how the sun works.
It would also make sense.
Listen, man, don't talk to me about this equinox crap.
Year twice.
Yeah. I keep doing that. Yeah. What's that, Marty?
Also,
I didn't hear what you said, Zach.
Hey. Yeah.
Oh, I'm saying we don't hate
on time change or anything like that. But anyway.
I'm just saying don't talk to me about equinox crap is what I'm saying, Marty or Jesse.
Yeah.
I know how the sun works. Anyway.
Yeah. Ikaruga is also coming out on the Switch on May 29th, which is really, really soon, including Tate mode for those of you who like that type of thing. it joins a handful of Switch games that can be played that way. And if you're like Jesse, you can play it in your custom Tate mode grip that he 3D printed.
Except I don't like bullet hell, so I'm not going to get it.
Yeah, Ikaruga is like I wanted to. And I don't even know if I'm saying that name right, because I've never played the game. I've always heard about it and always wanted to.
Yeah, Ikaruga is pronouncing it right.
Like, I really have always wanted to play it because I'm a huge fan of shooters. But then, like, I went and watched a video on it, and I was like, oh, my gosh.
This is the one that had my
Switch across the room.
The two-color, you can switch between colors and...
Yeah.
Right? You're like red and blue. So if you were red, you can pass through red bullets, but... not blue, and you can switch to blue, and
that's exactly right.
Yeah, again, I've never played this, but I've seen it, and I've seen videos, and it's ugly.
Yeah.
It's ugly in the way that it's a bullet hell. It is.
I think it was the original one, right? It was the original bullet hell shooter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This was like GameCube era.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. And so, and it was a huge deal back then. And you know, I mean, like, there's going to be a lot of people, I think, who are excited about that. So those are games coming out soon. Hey, Zach, let's talk about what we've been playing, shall we? Let's do it.
All right. And let's do it. Let's talk about what we've been playing. Marty, what have you been playing, dude?
Absolutely nothing.
Nothing.
Right on. I'm serious. And I like how disappointing it is for me to come on to the show and say that. But like, I've had one of those weeks where I've literally not been able to play anything. Although I will say over the weekend, I did get to sit down and finish the Labo variety kit.
Okay.
With my kids, which basically meant that they watched me build the motorbike.
The motorbike's a little bit interesting, hey?
Yeah, but I mean, it was Sundays are church days at our house. And so we're up in the mornings and we're going to church and we don't get back until like 12:30 or 1. We eat lunch with my wife's family, who we also live with. And you guys have probably heard that story if you're longtime listeners of the show. If not, it's like this huge house that's the laundry room is the go-between two houses. So we eat lunch with them. So we'll sit around and talk and play some cards or play a game. And then I had a couple hours. I was like, you know what? I'm just going to build the motorbike. And so I started doing it and the kids wandered by and they're like, oh, you're building a motorbike. Cool. I was like, yeah, you want to help? No, I want to go play Minecraft.
Let me know when you're done.
And I've had enough that's creativity. Exactly
what they did. Yeah. After I was done though, totally into it. But Zach, you had mentioned earlier that you kind of wanted to talk about this. I have a question for you.
Yes.
Are you guys already seeing Labo burnout?
Oh, totally. Well, here's the thing that I think one of the things that, you know, because I almost tweeted this, but then I thought I'd hold this for the show. But basically, you know what? 1 week out after everything's built, I got a lot of cardboard sitting around my house that we're not doing a whole lot with. I don't know if your house is the same way, but once it was built, there is initial appeal of that software. And once you have seen it once, you're good. Like the motorbike, I have no desire to go play the motorbike. I don't think any of the kids really have any, you know, there's like that sort of, I almost get the sense that it's more of like, hey, here's this little motorbike here. I want to try it out. And then they sit down with it for a couple minutes and it's like, oh, that's it. Okay. Well, never mind. Well, maybe I'll try the piano and then I'll sit down and, oh, that's it. Oh, okay. No, maybe we'll try the fishing. Oh, that's it. Right. Like it's just this weird sort of circular pattern where it's not fulfilling or fun. I will say that the most use that we've gotten or the most appealing things that my kids have drawn themselves towards is for my son, we actually built the robot kit together and he had a friend over today and they were like taking turns with it, which was pretty cool. That thing has been sitting on a hook in our living room for like since we bought it almost though. Right. Like it's the entire thing. I think that they need to they need to put more time into the actual games, you know, into the software because the stuff right now is just not great at all. Once you build it, you're done, which is not a great feeling. And I think that they need to sell smaller packs. I think five things in that variety pack was too many. Because you burn out before you get through them all, right? Like if you were able to buy something with three things in it, or maybe like one or two projects and then you're done. And then instead of putting a card in or like a cartridge in, you just put like a digital download code. I think that would be a way smarter idea. You'd be able to move them faster or you'd be able to move them more. Right now,
I think what you're saying, like a couple of more extensive projects, but not anywhere near as extensive as the robot, right?
Yeah, like I actually I like the robot kit better than I like the variety kit.
Well, I think the variety kit, like if you look at it, Nintendo has precedent for this of taking ideas and like having really good ideas And they're like good ideas at first, but then the further they go with them, they become greater ideas, right?
Yeah.
So I think you kind of see that in the variety kit. Like, you know, oh, there's an RC car. You can buzz the Joy-Cons and make it move around. Well, but maybe we could make it, you know, have IR going on, you know, and have this or have that going on. Or because, like, I know that, like, since we built the RC cars, we've not touched them.
Oh, no.
Right?
No, of course.
But yeah. the house, my daughter has gone back to that several times.
Yeah, actually, you know what? My daughter has too. You're right.
She really enjoyed decorating it, and she enjoyed doing the thing with that. My son likes the fishing, and he's played it a couple of times. I'm interested to see what the practical applications of Labo are outside its own software. And what I mean by that is, can Nintendo create this and make it something that is, I don't want it to be necessary for a game, but something that would enhance a game in a way that if it wasn't there,
yeah,
would suffer. You get what? Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah. I think, I think part of it is that there's an almost, let's use this thing. Like, imagine if you could use the motorbike in Mario Kart, for example. Like, is that kind of what you're saying? Like, let's use like
that kind of thing. Yes.
Or like a replacement for plastic peripherals or something like that. Like, let's combine those ideas. I think that's a good idea. I agree. I think part of, you know, I'm thinking, what is it about my experience with Labo that has made it so underwhelming? I think part of it, honestly, is almost more of a function of like what's going on in our house, which is we have a 1.5-year-old. And so all of that cardboard, when it's not in use, has to be up on a shelf out of reach.
Sure.
Right. So I've got a book. We have a bookshelf in our living room, and all of the cardboard is on the very top shelf because it's the only place that we had room. And so the kids can't reach it, which is not great, admittedly. Right. But at the same time, like, it's not like they can't ask for it if they want it, but it's just a matter of,
are
like,
they going to ask for it?
Exactly. And I mean, within one day, the whatever the little lip is on the piano that like on the bottom thing where it holds all the keys, right? Where you kind of, the piano that actually is not built that great. Like, there's this weird tray that just doesn't sit in the main body of the piano very well. It's not very secure, I find. And so, anyways, the piano, we ended up getting like kind of ripped at some point. We had to tape it together, but then the cardboard was a little bit softer after it had happened. And so it just is not, you know, it's not the same after the damage. I know they kind of say, oh yeah, well you could do that. Well, you could. And I think part of the issue that I'm realizing too is that the initial complaints of, oh, well the cardboard, well it's cardboard and you can repair it. It's like, well, yeah, you could, but you really want to constantly be spending time repairing it. Like, that's not fun.
It's kind of like saying, hey, I cut off my finger. I can reattach this.
Yeah, or even like, but yeah,
it's probably not going to work the same way it used to.
You could get stitches, but, you know, I mean, that sucks and it hurts and you have to go to the doctor and, you know, all that kind of stuff. It's just, at the very least, it's annoying. And it's an inconvenience. And when you want to play with the toy, you want to play with the toy. And I don't want to have, want to have frequent interactions with my kids of, oh, dad, this ripped, or, oh no, this cardboard, or, oh, get that away from the, you know, like I think that
get
there's
that away from the 1-year-old.
Exactly. Right. Like that's not fun.
Yeah. We don't have that, but we have it like in the box that it shipped in. Right.
Yeah.
That's where the variety pack stuff is. And we still have the leftovers in the actual Labo box that it came with.
Yeah.
Because we just haven't done anything with them. We haven't even opened the robot kit. Like, I opened it long enough to like look inside and see
the
what
robot
was in there.
Kit. Yeah. The robot kit's actually a really fun build. There's a few parts that actually, and me and my son actually spent the better part of a day building that robot kit, and it was fun. Like, I actually really enjoy, there are a few things that you do in that kit too that are very, they're just really smart. like the mm-hmm. like the way that you I don't know, is there such a thing as a spoiler on Building Labo stuff?
No.
Right, but like basically part of the robot kit is the pistons that go up and down in there, right? And sure. And you literally take an entire sheet worth, like it's essentially a full-size sheet of cardboard, and you tear it into strips and fold it up and put it inside each one of those. So each one of those things has an entire sheet of cardboard folded up inside it nice and heavy, right? So you're using it as a weight. And there were a few moments like that in the build that I was like, huh, that's actually really smart, right? Like it was a cool build to kind of work through. One thing that I have not done yet that I actually have been meaning to do is to get into that programming stuff, because and that's something that I haven't really explored at all, and neither is my son. And I think that if I were to spark his interest with that it would be that he could actually probably do some pretty cool things with it. But he's right at that age where I'm like, would it grab him for one, right? And like, or is it a little bit too intimidating still? He's right at that stage where he can read, but
I think with Labo, like there's going to be a subsection of kids that it absolutely just grabs and will not let go, right? Yeah. Especially the programming stuff. And they're going to have a wonderful time figuring that out and, you know, making their own creations. And then there's the other kids who, like, for a time, and not as long maybe as the Toy-Con Garage, but in the other direction, they're going to have an amazing time decorating these, right? I've seen some really cool Labo creations over the last week.
There was a really great video that I watched of somebody who painted the entire piano to be like a Breath of the Wild piano.
Yeah.
It was really cool.
Yeah, the one that I saw that comes to mind is somebody had done their RC car as a guardian.
Oh, cool.
From Breath of the Wild, and had like all the markings on it, and it did it in like neon paint, so it looks like it's glowing. And yeah, it's little things like that. My kids aren't to that stage yet. They don't necessarily have that skill or whatever.
Yeah.
And so they don't have the Toy-Con Garage. So I would assume that your kids and my kids kind of fall into the other category of there's going to be a larger subset of kids who and parents who buy Labo. And they're going to get it and they're going to play with it and go, well, that was a cool toy for a little bit. And then it's going to go sit in a closet.
That's exactly what mine is going to end up being.
You know? And so like we bought it with the idea of, oh, maybe this will help learn or maybe this. And they did, like, because I think part of Labo, I think part of the game, quote unquote, is building it.
Yeah.
Right. That's part of the experience of Labo.
I think that actually is my biggest takeaway, because my initial response was, oh, this is really exciting. And like, I built one of the things with my kids the day that I got it. And then they went to bed. And then I was like, I'm just going to build the motorbike right now. And then I built it. And then it was like instant regret. I was like, well, crap. Now, like, and then I like played the game and it was like, oh, well, this is kind of fun to build it, but it was
not about the software.
Yeah. And I felt it almost felt like, wow, I feel like I kind of cheated my kids out of this experience. So
the only thing that I could like find that I would like accurately put my thoughts into words about it are, it's kind of like as being an adult who likes to build Legos.
Yeah.
Like the experience of building Legos as an adult is great. It's zen. It's fun. I can switch my mind off and I can follow directions for a while and just kind of zone out. And it's like my happy place, right? You know, like I can just go and build and I can have a good time and I can relax.
Yep.
Labo's kind of that way in that you can do that. Like it gives you all the directions, you know, and it's easy to follow along. But both of them end with, what do I do with it now?
Yeah.
You know, because like, again, as an adult Lego collector or person, I don't collect every. I haven't bought a Lego set in months.
I literally bought one today. I'm not even kidding.
like the question is, and you know, you asked this question is, okay, it's built. What do I do with it now?
Yeah.
Because I'd really like it to stay in one piece, and I may not have room to display it, or I may have room to display it, but then what does that do to the rest of my space? And what you get what I'm saying?
Here, Marty, look, I'll show you right now. Look. It's the Rocket Raccoon and Groot pod from Avengers Infinity War. There you go. That's what I bought today.
I wasn't going to buy any Legos.
Now you are.
Now I see it and I need it.
Did you know that if you buy that set and the Guardians ship that they connect together? Yeah, that's right, man. I know, right? It's so cool.
Shut up.
Anyway.
And you also get two of the Infinity Stones.
Yeah, exactly. And then you also would have Thanos
totally
at that point.
You totally have to buy the other set that comes with Thanos to get the gauntlet.
No, that's what I'm saying, is that the Guardians ship comes with Thanos. It comes with Thanos already. Yeah, so then you're good, right? So then at least with those two sets, and you got Thanos and two stones to go in the gauntlet.
Got most of the Guardians of the Galaxy.
And you've got all the Guardians in those sets anyways. Yeah.
So is the Groot that comes... Lego
Man, it's a mini. It's like, the Groot minifig.
Is the Groot that comes with that Teenage Groot?
Yep.
Sold.
Yeah, and that's the $20. That's the $20 set, dude. That's the $20 set.
Wrap this.
All right.
Right now. No, seriously. But you do this. Like when you got done with that Lego set, right?
Yeah. I do?
What am I going to do with this now?
I will tell you exactly what I do. Is I put it on my shelf for about 2 or 3 weeks. Then I take it apart and I just have the minifigs sitting on my shelf on the little plate that I have that has all the cool minifigs. That's what I do. Yeah.
Yep.
So
in the end, but here's the thing, arguably in Labo, the minifig is the cartridge.
Yeah. Except the cartridge is no good.
So that's what I'm saying is like, what do you do with it when all the cardboard's gone?
Yeah. Well, and I'll tell you a secret is that, I initially thought, oh, well, you know what? You'll be able to just make your own. No, this is too complicated to make your own. Like, it's way more involved than I initially thought it would be as far as...
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Right? Like I even tried making my own RC car, and it didn't work. That was just, like, the RC car that I made was garbage. So, out of my own cardboard. I used cardstock that was too light, but, it was too thin, but how was I supposed to know that, right? So...
You were just magically supposed to know it, Zach.
I know, right? Well, that's the thing is that it is complicated enough that you're not going to be able to do it yourself, make your own stuff.
So, like, I'll just say this, like, if you're listening and you haven't gotten Labo yet, if you have kids, if you haven't got Labo, don't let this be all doom and gloom and don't buy Labo. But if you have a reservation on it, here's what I would say. Like, if you feel that reservation in your mind, I would just pick one of the sets.
Yeah.
Instead of just going whole hog and jumping in on both like I did.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm still looking forward to the robot build, but
that robot build is pretty rad, dude.
My question now is like, if my box is full with the variety kit, where am I going to put the robot stuff?
The robot kit, the way it's designed, they teach you this in the game, is the robot kit is designed so that when you're not using it, it has a hook on it so that you can hang it up on like a coat rack or like a coat hook, right?
Okay.
And the handles and the feet things and the little screw knobs, whatever, and the headset or the visor, they all actually, you can open the top and put all of them inside. So
that's fantastic.
So when you're done, you literally just hang this box on the wall and you're done.
That's great.
So that I think that's actually part of why I like the robot suit so much is because when you're not using it, it's literally like, yes, you have a huge cardboard box on your wall, but that's all that you have. You don't have all these stupid little pieces everywhere, which is exactly my problem with the variety kit right now is that I have a freaking Rubbermaid full of little knickknack things that I'm sure I'm going to lose the button for the house or the cat knob for the piano or you know what I mean? And like, that's just a matter of time, which is super annoying because, here's another thing that is annoying to me is that they give you absolutely zero extra reflector tape or, you know what I mean?
Sponge like stickers,
like all of that stuff. There is zero extra. Like if you accidentally put that reflector tape on the wrong spot and have to take it off and heaven forbid you know, the paper comes off the cardboard and you ruin that little strip of reflector tape, you're SOL. Like, too bad, mm-hmm. because there is no extra. They don't give you any extra, which is just, I think, is just really dumb. Especially since, again, going back to the example of Lego, like, any, if there is a small piece, then you are guaranteed to have one extra. That's just, like, part of the deal, right? So, I don't know. It's a little...
Well, they've got a lot to learn.
Yeah.
And I would be willing to bet that the next Labo Toy-Con set that comes out maybe does a better job of being self-contained.
Yeah.
Although we may be, you know, with some of the things that we've seen, like the pedal and the steering, I think the bird. It was the steering wheel ride and the bird, we may be headed for variety kit number two.
And here's the thing, though, is that I will probably, well, I mean, we'll probably get it for the show anyways, but just for more review purposes than anything else. But I feel like I feel like my biggest takeaway for it is going to be, for myself, pace myself and just like, okay, well, I don't have to freaking, you know, like as exciting as it might be, this is the kind of thing that you really do kind of just need to let your kids do it. You know what I mean? Because that's the most exciting part. And I'm not going to be like, oh my gosh, I'm so excited now. I just don't want to, you know, I'm going to build this at least one of the things in the variety pack myself. If I do that, I know that they're not going to get as much out of it either. And that sucks for them. So, yeah. So, yeah. And again, it's just one thing, but I think part of it is that then it'll last longer, maybe, is the other thing. Right. If it's like, oh, we got more stuff to build, and then at least maybe see if they're going to burn out on it before, because it sounds like that's what you're saying, Marty, is that for you, that your kids were like, by the end, they were like, no, I don't want to build anymore. So,
well, it's not that they don't want to build. It's just that we did the motorbike at a kind of inconvenient time.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
I was like, I've got to get this done. I've got to get, you know, it's been sitting out on my table.
Well, you've still got that robot kit to do too, eh?
Yeah. And I'm going to ask them to help me with that. We'll see how that goes.
Yeah. Right on. I do have one more game that I wanted to talk about briefly. I have been playing, when I can, South Park, The Stick of Truth, or no, shoot, what's it called? The Fractured But Whole. And that game is really funny. It's not, you know, it's not for the kids, obviously. If I have to tell you that, then, welcome to 2018. There's this show called South Park that you shouldn't let your kids watch.
Welcome to 1999.
Exactly. So, you know, it is a South Park game, but I don't know if either of you guys played the Stick of Truth. This game has, it's basically kind of a combination of like a point and click adventure in one part, you know, where you're kind of wandering around the environments and looking for things, and, you know, it's sort of like an open world RPG in that sense. And then the other one, it has turn-based grid combat, which I know, Jesse, is your favorite. So,
yeah, I did play like the first chapter-ish of Stick of Truth. You know, the overworld was kind of the same thing. You explored the city.
Collecting, it's just like things, straight out of the game. I think
doing side quests.
Yeah, the craziest thing about this game is that it is that it looks exactly like playing an episode of South Park.
Yeah, you know, the difference is the combat in the first game wasn't grid based. It was more just your standard
RPG Final Fantasy style. Yeah.
Static locations, but with the new game, they do add the grid based, like Radiant Historia. Use that example.
Yeah. Yeah, so this game is, I mean, you've got your superheroes, my guy, you know, you're the new kid. So I think that's, so my kid, I picked like the brawler. And so he, like, I love the costumes too, where they're like, you know, where he's like the human mosquito, and he's got, what is it? Like a vuvuzela, whatever that horn is.
Oh no.
Like kind of inverted on his face. So it's like the mosquito stinger. Right. My guy, I chose, whatever, not the thing, you know, the, like, he's a big Rocky guy and he's got like egg cartons glued to his body all over. It's pretty funny. So it's cool. I like it. It's definitely not for everybody. If you like South Park, you'll like this game. I actually am not like, I've never really gotten into South Park, but, it has very irreverent humor. And so if you are offended by bad words or, mature themes, then this is not for you. But if you enjoy that kind of, irreverent humor, then it still might not be for you because it goes pretty far. Like
like the show pulls no punches, the game pulls no punches.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So that is South Park, the Stick of Truth. Thank you.
No, it's not.
The fractured but whole. It was so funny. I was my son again. I sometimes forget now. He's like almost all the way through grade two, and he's like, "Dad, why do you have a game called The Fractured Butthole on our Switch?" And I'm like, "That's why there's that is why there's parental controls on this thing." So, anyway. Marty, have you been playing? Marty hasn't been playing anything else. Jesse, what about you, man?
All right. So before I get into the name of this game, do you remember a little company called Skunk Software? Does it ring a bell at all?
Maybe.
All right. So about 2 years ago, I mentioned that I bought a package of mediocre games from Skunk Software that they literally gave away for free. It didn't cost me anything just because if I bought a game on a discount on the Wii U, you still got the full gold coins for it.
Right.
So I downloaded it just to get the gold coins. So does this ring a bell?
And what was it called?
I don't remember what that was called, but it was like the Skunk Game Pack or something is pretty much what it was.
Yeah.
Anyway, so this is a game from Skunk Software for the new 3DS called 3D Retro Dungeon Puzzle Challenge.
Wow.
Then they're selling it for 70 cents.
What?
So I figured, okay, I'll throw a dollar at this and see what this is. Watch this dumpster fire. And the graphics kind of remind me of like Quake and Doom back in the early 90s. And the whole thing is like, you know, I think I played it for 15 or 20 minutes and I got to the final boss. But then that thing has kicked my butt.
Wow.
So the controls make sense once you're used to them, but they're just not intuitive. So your forward and backward is the L and R buttons. The circle pad lets you look left and right, but that's it. Not look up or look down.
Okay.
And then X is shoot an arrow, which like looks like, you know, blocky like a Minecraft arrow, but even worse. And there's a lot. It starts you off with like really simple tutorial. You know, think like how you started off with the portal. You know, level one portal was literally.
It was literally like move.
You know, yeah, move. Put this block on a button to open the door and walk out it. You know,
yeah.
So it's learn the controls, find the exit, learn the concept of keys, see that imp over there. Don't go near it. Let him sleep, because if you wake him up, he'll kill you. So there's literally just 11 stages in this game,
mm-hmm.
with the 11th one being the final boss, and a few of them are a little tricky, and if you like really get stumped on how to solve it, at the menu select, there's a button that says spoiler, and it kind of explains how to beat the level. So I did the spoiler for the final boss and read what I'm supposed to do. I'm like, okay, I still don't know if I can pull that one off. If it was like a dual stick shooter movement, I think I might have better luck.
because you ultimately need to be moving in a different direction you're facing, but you can't do that here.
Because
you have to constantly like avoid getting shot at while you're trying to shoot at it, which means optimally you want to strafe, but there is no strafing in this game. Your only movement is forward or backward. So, yeah, it was 15 minutes-ish. You know, I'm probably not going to go back to it to finish it. It 70 cents. I figured, why not?
Wow.
That's so, thank you, Skunk.
Skunks. For
another great game.
Jeez.
I want to know is this. Do you feel like you got your money's worth?
I'd actually say yeah. I'd say yeah, this was worth a buck.
You're a lot more forgiving than the rest of us, Jesse.
Well, most people probably wouldn't agree, but it for a different type of game, you know, I don't like shooters, but this was one that I could manipulate up until the final boss, which so
yeah.
Right on.
So your mileage may vary. It's hard to argue with a 70 cent investment.
Right on. Very cool. Right on. Well, do we have any emails going on here tonight, Marty?
Yeah, actually we do. We've got one.
All right. Well, let me push.
I want to highlight.
Let me push a button and then we can talk about it. How's that sound?
And I want to highlight it for this reason. It says this is the subject line. Don't defend Marty.
Oh, yeah. All right, here we go. Right. Marty, do you want to read it?
Yeah, I'll read it. Yeah, I'll read this. This is from Travis, and he writes this. Hello, dads. First, I would like to say that you are all fine fellows. Well, thank you, Travis. We appreciate that. I listen regularly and write occasionally, although it's been quite a while since I wrote last. Today, I am writing because I wrote an email a few weeks ago entitled In Defense of Marty or something to that effect. I'm not sure what this person was defending that Marty said, because after I heard the words In Defense of Marty, everything that followed just sounded like an adult from Charlie Brown. Why do I say this? Donkey Kong Country Tropical Freeze. Or maybe it was Donkey Kong Country Returns. I can't remember. The point is, who removes either of those games from a top 10 list because they're too hard? I'll tell you who. My children. My son is 2 and my daughter is 7 months old. I can understand them removing those games from the list due to their difficulty because they still poop their pants. However, Marty is a grown man who does not poop his pants. And I would like to say at this point, you are absolutely correct. And thank you for, I don't know who you are and how you know my intimate details of my life, but you
know
right.
What, you know what, my pants. I don't know. I prove it.
No, I'm not proving it. No, that's a little too far for the show. Justin has already taken his shirt off. I'm not doing the other just to prove
that
I don't.
There is a burden of proof that has been, there is a claim that has been made. And now you must prove.
I'll just track. How about I track it? Well, there's an app for that, I'm sure. Yeah. Pantspoop.com.
Listen, Marty, you know what? Accidents happen, man. And there's no shame in that. And it happens to the best of us. It's no big deal.
Well, all right. Anyway, moving on. He then writes this. Baby want a bottle.
Oh, what?
I was thinking about this morning as I skimmed a Nintendo Life review of Tropical Freeze on the Switch. I saw the new Funky Mode logo on the box and thought, perhaps Marty could handle it this time around. Perhaps not. My wife is not a gamer in the sense that I am, though she does join in on Mario, both 2D and 3D, as well as Mario Kart, Nintendo Land, the Rayman games, as well as both Donkey Kong Country Returns and Tropical Freeze. We've also been playing a lot of Lovers in a Dangerous Space Time, which I highly recommend. She didn't grow up gaming. I had to lovingly and patiently ease her into it and tell her often that some of the times I find her the cutest is when she tackles a level in a platformer with ease. That's why I call you out for your atrocities, kind sir. My wife and I beat both of these Donkey Kong games. Were there times she wanted to give up? You better believe me, but she didn't. It probably took us 100 attempts to kill that stupid owl at the end of Tropical Freeze, but we did it. And if he or the polar bear in a half pipe ever show up again in a sequel, we'll gladly jump on their heads until they die again. because that's what you do. You don't quit and you don't knock masterpieces off a top 10 list because you can't handle the pressure unless you still poop your pants. Then you can do whatever you want. I actually think you're great, Marty. I appreciate everything you do, but I just need to get that off my chest. Now, excuse me while I go listen to the Donkey Kong rap. Thank you for hearing me out, Travis. All right. Here's the response, Travis, and you can go and check out my personal Twitter feed and get this today. Somehow, some way, because of that one time, my very first show on Nintendo Dads, knocking this game off our top 10, I have been labeled as a Donkey Kong hater. And I'm here to tell you and clear my name that that is further from the truth. I have fond memories of the Super Nintendo days of all Donkey Kong Country games for that. I love those games. I still play those games. I still think they hold up even from the 16-bit era. Donkey Kong Country Returns, played it, beat it. Donkey Kong Country Tropical Freeze, played it, beat it. However, I did not do it with a partner. I did it by myself. That being said, I still stand by my decision to take it off the top 10. And the reason being is that going back and thinking about that list, there were no other games that I could remove in good conscience. I'm not taking Smash Brothers off. I'm not taking Mario 3D World off. I'm not taking I'm not going to take any of those games that were on there. I'm not going to take those off in favor of Donkey Kong, which to its detriment, I found to be too difficult. Now, when I say too difficult, it doesn't mean that it was too difficult for people to complete. I meant that it was too difficult in the sense that for the subject material and what it was, it just became too difficult for a game that seemingly was marketed toward families and children. And for that, I had to give it a pass. Does that mean I'm not picking up Donkey Kong Country Tropical Freeze? No, it's sitting here on my Switch right now. I'm buying it again. I'm going to go through it again because I think it was a great game. Masterpiece? I don't know that I would say that, but I don't hate Donkey Kong. I'm down with the Kong, man. I'm ready to play as Donkey Kong and Rayman, Mario and Rabbids Kingdom Battle. I like Donkey Kong. I love Donkey Kong. I don't know what else people want me to say, but I will say this. I love Donkey Kong, but Donkey Kong 64 is still a big steaming pile of crap. Mm. And that you can't change my mind. Sorry. But man, thanks for your input. I understand. Sometimes I say some things on here. People don't like them.
It's well, okay. here's part of
being on a podcast, right?
Here's the thing though, is that I think that it's one thing to say, I guess maybe it's late and I'm crabby right now, but I'm just looking at this. I don't want to let the brazen dismissiveness of this email, the condescending tone go completely unnoticed and unchallenged either. In this sort of like, and I know that it's kind of tongue in cheek, which is why I'm not actually as upset about it as I'm seeming, but I don't know. I feel like baby want his bottle is a little bit extreme and I just wanted to make sure that that did not go unchallenged or uncalled out. So,
I actually prefer to drink my Coke from a bottle.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah.
Not a can.
Yeah.
So, but, I can confirm again,
baby does want his bottle.
My pants.
Oh yeah. Listen, man, you don't need to answer that question. That's private. It's okay.
I can confirm
sometime
that I am the healthiest podcaster that has ever podcasted.
Mm.
My doctor said so in a pre-written statement that I gave him to give people.
Yeah. Right? Yeah.
It's true. It's true.
It's so true. Yeah, the truest.
I am the healthiest.
Never before in the history of all podcasts has there been a podcaster as healthy as you. And if you, yeah.
Yep.
Does your doctor have a mustache and throw pills around?
Yeah, wow.
He does actually. He, and when I ask him, He always surprises me when he walks through the door, because he throws the door open when he comes and visits, and he says, "It's a me." He just likes to say that a lot. I don't know why.
Yeah, right on. Well, but I think
that's all of our mail. If you guys want to write mail, you can do that.
Do it.
We'll read it, and we'll respond to it.
Yeah, right on. That's what. Well, hey, you know what? By the way, is it this week that 1UP Box made their announcement?
Yeah. So usually our end of the show here is sponsored by 1UP Box. From this show forward, sadly, guys, that will not be happening. 1UP Box is ending as of April 2018. This is going to be their last box. And so we want to say thanks to 1UP Box for sponsoring the show for so long and always sending us cool stuff. I have several stickers on my laptop that I'm doing this show from that came out of 1UP Box, including a Smash Brothers sticker, Pokemon stickers, and other things. And so it's just kind of sad. You know, it's kind of like the end of an era. It's one of those things, like, you know, you start strong with an idea like that, and then over time it probably just kind of plays out, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. Fare thee well, 1UP Box, and thanks for the support. We love you guys.
Yeah, you guys are awesome. Thank you so much, and we will miss you guys being a part of the show. So, having said that, guys, I think that is a show.
That's a show.
I think the first thing I want to say is, first off, to both of you fine gentlemen, thank you for doing the show tonight. It's been a pleasure, as always. As well, thank you to our Patreon producers, Chris, Dave, and Timothy. You guys are awesome. And also, if you guys want to stick around to the end of the show, we are going to have a super cool interview put in the post show here from the developers of a game coming out that was recently announced in the Nintendo showcase, Nindies showcase. The game is West of Loathing, and is Asymmetrical Productions Studios.
Asymmetric.
Oh my gosh, dude. I am so bad at hawking other people's crap. Anyway, it's not crap. It's actually got it's got lots of great reviews on other platforms, and it's coming to the Switch soon. Check out the interview. I think you guys will really like it. Huge thanks to all of our supporters over on patreon.com/NintendoDads. If you want to follow us on all the social medias, go to Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram at NintendoDads. If you want to email us, NintendoDads@gmail.com. Watch our videos and our faces on Twitch or YouTube. Search for Nintendo Dads and you'll find us. Call in and leave us a voicemail, 929-25-NDADS. That's 929-256-3237. Huge thanks to OC Remix for our music throughout the show. And of course, if you want to change the world, go to iTunes and leave us a 5-star review. Written reviews are even better. And of course, if you want to subscribe, go to iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and of course, VGTribune.com for me, for Jesse, for Marty, and for the Sleeping Beauty Justin. We will see you next time. Bye-bye.
Nintendo Dads.
Ta-da. Hello everyone and welcome to a special episode of Nintendo Dads, and we are here today with the developers of an awesome game that is coming to the Nintendo Switch. The game, of course, is West of Loathing. And you know what? I'm gonna just totally embarrass myself here. I didn't get your guys' names again. Zach and
Kevin,
that's right, from, oh my gosh, dude.
Asymmetric,
Asymmetric.
I'm Zach Johnson, I'm the creative director of Asymmetric.
There we go.
And I'm Kevin Simmons, I'm a producer and designer.
Yeah, so, you guys were, first off, my apologies for being an airhead. Second, thanks for being on the show. I appreciate you guys being on here and being willing to kind of, talk about your game a little bit. So tell us a little bit about Asymmetric and, you know, who you guys are and you know, all that sort of jazz. Introduce yourselves a little bit.
So Asymmetric began in 2003. I made a game called Kingdom of Loathing, which was a like a web multiplayer RPG. Same kind of stick figure art and goofy, jokey writing as West of Loathing, but much lower tech. And I just sort of worked on it for a bit and put it out there, and it took off. And I hired some people to help me with it. And then, 14 years later, we decided it was time to make a second game. And so we started work on our stick figure cowboy game, which came out this past August on PC and is headed to Nintendo Switch this spring.
Yeah, right so on, man.
Would you consider it a sequel or a spiritual successor?
It's kind of neither. It's Kingdom of Loathing is still going and we're still adding stuff to it. We sort of have to add stuff to it or it stops making any money.
True.
But West of Loathing is more just a kind of a standalone game in the same universe, sort of a, just a parallel.
So like, yeah, kind of looking at this, the main thing that connects them together is sort of that art style and,
Yeah, it nominally takes place in the same world, but we're not. You know, we're never real careful with the lore consistency of it. And I think generally the thing that unites them, the thing that makes them both loathing games is the art and the sort of comedy style.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think Kingdom of Loathing is sort of unstuck in time in a way that West of Loathing is trying not to be. West of Loathing is trying to be set in a particular sort of genre, time and place kind of in a way that Kingdom of Loathing is just kind of all things.
Yeah,
it's sort of nominally fantasy, but
yeah, it seems like you know, just given even the trailer and I haven't played it on any of the other platforms or anything, but I get the sense from the trailer even, you know, that this isn't something that lends itself to being super over analytical and like intellectual about it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we definitely try to maintain a level of quality and polish to it for what it is. But yeah, like what it is very, very silly.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah, I think there's just sort of that like, okay, well, we're not going to I think it's like let's take ourselves seriously within that world. But also we're on the rules are pretty flexible. Right. So right on.
Yeah. You know, it's internally consistent.
There you go.
It's also like the American Southwest, but there are goblins.
Yeah. Awesome. So tell me a little bit. So like I watched this trailer and again, I at least have not played it on any of these other platforms. I actually for gaming tend to stick to my Switch pretty consistently these days. And so what, tell me a little bit about, West of Loathing. Like what was the idea behind it? What kind of a game, you know, like what kind of things can people expect? What are you excited about? All that jazz.
Well, it's a, you know, it's a comedy game, first and foremost, but it's a pretty decent RPG as well. It's kind of a hybrid of an adventure game and a role-playing game. So you move around the world and you sort of bump into things to interact with them. And you'll get some sort of prompt that lets you either it's just sort of explaining, like an object or lets you interact with it and you can collect objects and then you can run into other enemies and things like that. And you'll start fights and there's like a tactical turn-based combat system.
And a lot of like puzzles to solve and like, sort of ongoing connected storylines and stuff. We really took a lot of inspiration from a few places, but principally, there was an old Sierra adventure game series called Quest for Glory, which was this kind of like generic fantasy setting, at least to begin with. But you'd like pick a class and you had stats, but then it was just a Sierra game, like King's Quest. You were walking around and solving puzzles and stuff, but your choice of character class determined what your approach to the puzzles was going to be. And we really like took a lot of inspiration from that and tried to make it so there's just a lot of things in the world that you can approach from various angles. Like it's definitely supported to play through the game without ever fighting anything, or it's definitely supported to play through the game just fighting and murdering everything.
Yeah. Some other touchstones for us in terms of like games that we referenced a lot while we were designing and making West of Loathing. So besides the Quest for Glory series was Paper Mario, sort of a, like, ideally sort of a low numbers sort of combat kind of situation in terms of the turn-based combat. And then also Skyrim. We wanted there to be just this giant open world that you could explore kind of at leisure, and have a relatively short, straightforward main quest line, but then just tons of side quests to dig into if that was your desire.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's really cool. It's one of the, there's just something about, I'm curious about the art style and where that came from. I love the whimsical nature of it, I guess is maybe the word I would use. Tell me about that. Like, I know some people will use that style for different reasons, whether it's I'm just curious what it was for you guys that really drew you to that.
So when it was just me working on Kingdom of Loathing to begin with, everything was sort of limited by me. So it was programmed just as well as I could program, which was not very well at all, and drawn as well as I could draw, which speaks for itself there. And I was a pretty good writer, I think, even then. And I was an okay, like, web application developer and sysadmin. So I was able to get it off the ground. But yeah, the art style started out as really just a constraint, because it was, you know, when the game had made negative $40, because it had cost me $40 for hosting, I wasn't going to hire an artist with that. So I just sort of illustrated it. And then it turns out, no matter how bad you are at art, if you just draw the same things for 15 years, it eventually turns into a style.
So yeah,
that's kind of how we ended up here.
Yeah. You just kind of eventually you're like, you know what? I'm just going to totally lean into it and own this entirely. And it just kind of becomes its own monster a little bit. Hey.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely.
I know I have this one little doodle I do when I sign birthday cards or things like that. And I've been doing that since I was 18 years old. And that's like the one thing I doodle.
I just had ideas of what that is, but I'm not going to say them because we try to keep this
a
family
show.
It's
a smiley face. It's a family friendly.
Classic.
Nice. Right on. So right on. So what is the, like, as far as like what, who is this game for? Like, what are you, where people are kind of looking at this game and thinking, you know, is this somebody for, is this a game for you or not? Like, what would you guys say for that?
That's a great question. I know they say, you're supposed to like do market research and really be thinking about, oh, look at that guy. you're supposed to really be thinking about who your audience is and how to best serve them and what they want. And we kind of never did that. During the development of West of Loathing,
marketing,
we kind of imagined that we were making it just for Kingdom of Loathing fans, because we thought, well, there are enough of them that if a tiny fraction of them buy it, we can still stay in business. And we didn't anticipate it sort of having the mainstream success on PC that it has had. But yeah, I don't know. I think it's possible that we not targeting a specific demographic was a little bit of an advantage for us, because it allowed it to just kind of be what it was in a kind of honest and authentic way.
Totally.
Kind of allow people to respond to it.
You know, it's funny. I was actually listening to, or I was reading some quotes or whatever online this week, and the directors, the Russo brothers, who are the directors of Avengers Infinity War. I saw that one of the things that they said just this week was that they, while they were making movies, they had learned very early on, don't try and please the fans. Don't try and figure out what the audience wants and gives that to them. Just do whatever you want to do and what is the most exciting and the most authentic. Like, tell the kind of story that you want to tell, and that's what's going to make the best movie. And it sounds like that's kind of what that meant to you guys, or what you guys did too, right? It's like, no, this is what we want to do. Therefore, it's going to be great.
Yeah, I mean, I think from my perspective, at least, like, this is the only kind of thing that I can even imagine doing, right? It's less that it's what I want to make than it's like, oh, this is what I'm capable of, and this is what the last decade and a half have revealed that I'm okay at.
Yeah.
I think there's a little bit of a difference with taking that approach to a game than taking it to a movie, which is that, like, if you make something and everyone who playtests it has the same problem with it, like that's a problem, right? So
absolutely,
it isn't like necessarily about like, you know, don't tell them like what kind of jokes that they want, they say they want to hear or whatever. But like, if they're like, hey, this puzzle is crap, and if everyone who tries to solve the puzzle tells you the puzzle is crap, then the puzzle is probably crap, regardless of how much you like it. So
absolutely, yeah. Well, and again, I think that comes down to like, okay, well, you know, the kind of game that you want to make is, you know, make the kind of game you want to make, and then refine it based on feedback, right? Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
Which, I mean, looking at your Steam reviews, by the way, out of over 2,000 reviews, 98% of these are positive. So I think you guys got something figured out, right?
Yeah, we've been real lucky, I think, with how well it has resonated with people.
I think we also had, we did sort of a psychological mind trick too, because we, you know, the game doesn't really look like anything. It, you know, it's the stick figure art game, and we priced it at $11. And when we launched it, we at least on PC, we had it on sale for like 10% off, so it was under $10. And so you get this game, and you think, well, you know, whatever, it can't be that bad. You know, it's only $10, and then you find out that it's got, you know, upwards of 40 hours of content if you really get into it.
Wow.
And you're like, oh wow, there's a whole bunch of game here. So we sort of under promise and over deliver, and I think that is another way in which you can make people happy.
Oh, totally. Yeah, like really just like give, like deliver a lot of value, right? That in a sort of an unexpected way. Absolutely.
We'll have to see the next time we make a game.
Right.
It's going to be hard to, if people's expectations are set by the quality of this one, then we can't really under promise as much as we'd like to.
You know what?
So guys, I wanted to kind of jump in and ask a question here. On that idea of making games, like, how did your relationship with Nintendo come about? Like, you know, I know that there's lots of indies who they make games and they don't necessarily get featured on an Indies Direct, right? So,
yeah, so like,
did they approach you, or did you approach them? Did.
Yeah, and that is
how did, like, how has working on the Switch been for you guys?
It's been great. The fact that Nintendo called us is one of the things that I would really like to be able to go back in time and tell my 12-year-old self, and also my parents, to just justify the time that I spent playing Metroid. But yeah, it's been, you know, we weren't really sure what to expect, right? Because we had never done any sort of a console port or anything before. And the bulk of the work for the port has been done by Kevin here on the logistical side, and then on the technical side by Victor, our programmer. So I can't really speak a lot to what that actual process has been like. It doesn't sound too bad. You know, and we're getting way more support than we had any right to expect from Nintendo in terms of promotion and just like sort of showing us the ropes. Like, I think the fact that the game sold well on Steam and we got their attention put us in a really good spot for having this process not suck.
So were you guys like were you considering going to the Switch before they contacted you, or did they literally like solicit you?
Yeah, I mean, we didn't really know how the game was going to do before we launched, but we internally, we were like, well, if it does okay, we would love to bring it to the Switch. We'd love to bring it to, you know, Xbox and PlayStation and all those things. And Nintendo was the only one that reached out directly to us out of that group. And when we made a build for the Switch and played it, we're like, oh, this is a perfect platform for this game. Like, it just felt really, really good. So the main thing that we've had to do is sort of change a bunch of the UI so that it works better with like the Joy-Cons.
Mm. Yeah, we didn't have controller support in the PC version. It was like a thing that we intended to do, but it ended up getting pushed back to post-launch. So like, yeah, the bulk of the work has been that stuff. But
was it
luckily,
just
our programmer
point and click mainly and keyboard.
Yeah.
And WASD movement.
Yeah, WASD movement and mouse stuff. And so we had to sort of deal with both of those things, like to be able to attach. Because there's sort of a bunch of different UI modalities in the game, depending on whether you're looking at the map or whether you're in a conversation or whatever. And so there was just a bunch of work to get controller support in. But luckily, our programmer has a AAA console background, so he was just sort of automatically really good at all that stuff. So basically, the first version of everything has been pretty workable.
Right on.
Yeah.
That's awesome, dude. Very cool.
Yeah, so we are currently in the middle of the certification process with Nintendo. So we're very close to the end of that process, and then hopefully release will follow soon after. We're not entirely sure when that will be, but soon.
Would it be is it safe to say like this quarter, like seems safe?
Yes.
What did they officially announce in the direct?
Nintendo's website has it marked as spring 2018.
Okay,
spring,
so yeah. that's like Q2.
Of course, as we've seen on other things, doesn't necessarily mean it, but we still have two months left to hopefully, hit this window.
Soon TM is what we're saying, right?
Yeah.
We're in pretty good shape.
Right. Soon that's TM. Awesome. That's
right on.
You took my joke.
Oh, sorry, dude. Hey, you want it back here? No, you're good. Well, right on, man. And then what? What else is going on? Like, are you guys working on new stuff? Or are you just kind of like hanging out in your West of Loathing Scrooge McDuck vault at this point? Just wondering, like, what are you doing?
Little bit of that. While we were really crunching on West of Loathing, we kind of let Kingdom of Loathing slide a little bit. So we've been paying a little bit more attention to that lately. We're also working on some DLC because on the ports are taking up a lot of the kind of technical resources that we have, but the creative resources are just kind of sitting there spinning our wheels. So we've got a chunk of DLC that we're working on, and we'll see, we'll see how that does. And if people are interested in it, then we might spend another like year or so making some more of that. But we're also like pretty much ready to go on the next game as soon as all of the just like support stuff kind of flattens out. And when the Switch port's done, and when I guess after that is the iOS port. Nice. And then after that, who knows? We'll never be done.
Right on.
It is weird because we sort of expected in our heads that we would launch the game in August of last year, and then we'd be done and we'd have like a couple months to just sort of relax or whatever. And like that has just not been the case. It's actually been more
it never
busy.
Works that way.
Yeah, it's been more busy after it launched than it was before, basically.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's exciting, though. I mean, there are good problems to have and bad problems.
Exactly.
To have. That's one of those good problems, right? Where you're like, oh, wait, this is successful. People like this. Now we got more stuff to do. So that's always good. So right on. Well, hey, anything else that you guys, that you were hoping we'd talk about, or anything else that you want to bring up before we wrap up today, guys?
I mean, the Switch is a rad console. There's a bunch of really good games on it.
Yeah, what are you guys playing?
I played all the way through the Breath of the Wild. I played a bunch of the. What have I been playing? I've been playing some Skyrim recently, actually.
Yeah.
I feel like that I played 30, 40 hours of it on PC and had a good time, but I spent way more time.
It's a dangerous combination, isn't it? To be able to play that laying in bed, and then all of a sudden it's like 5 a.m. and it's like, oh, what have I done?
Yep. It's just the Switch is just such a good platform for everything like that. I think, and that's another reason I think West of Loathing will do really well on it, is just because it's a perfect game to just pick up and then you can just, put it down for a couple of days, and it's not one of those action games where it's going to matter and you can come back to it and it'll still be funny,
So. Absolutely. Right on, man.
Yeah, we're really excited about it. I mean, like I said, we're all like 40-some-year-old dudes, and it is very exciting to us to have a game that we made on a Nintendo platform, and it's awesome that it's not one of the like bummer Nintendo platforms that's bad.
Yeah, right?
It's like, oh, absolutely. It's like a good one that everyone's excited about.
Yeah, it's about time. So, are you guys have any hopes for E3? Like anything that you're looking forward to, whether from yourselves or from just other cool, whether it's Nintendo or otherwise.
I feel like if anything was going to happen for us at E3, we would probably know about it by now. So I don't think so there, but yeah, no, I don't know. Like I am so embedded in the sort of PC games zone that I don't really know even what's kind of on the horizon for console games in general. What should I be looking forward to on the Switch?
Well, I mean, for Switch, the big thing that is at least announced is the next Smash Brothers. So that's a thing. I don't know if they'll show off the next Pokemon game or Metroid Prime 4. I don't know. What am I missing?
Yeah, I wish they would port. I wish they would port the older Metroid Prime games to the Switch.
Yeah, the trilogy.
A lot of people are hoping they kind of side announce that as wait longer. 4 is coming. Here's 1 through 3.
Basically, what they did with what they did with Twilight Princess on the Wii U, where they're like, "Oh crap, yeah. Breath of the Wild is a long ways off, guys. We should release the Twilight Princess."
So here's Wind Waker.
Yeah. Well, Wind Waker and Twilight Princess.
GameCube out, and it kind of makes me want to just be able to buy all of my GameCube games again and play them on the Switch.
If I could play something like Eternal Darkness again on the Switch, that'd be amazing. Or just some like game like that, I think would be great. But right on. Well, hey guys, thank you so much for your time and for hanging out with us. And I know that I'm personally really excited for West of Loathing to come out sometime in the next month or two. So yep. Look forward to that, everybody. So where do people find you guys online?
So I'm on Twitter at ZapJackson,
and I'm at Puzzle Theory, and our company is at ASYM, ASYM.
Right on. Wow. Yep, a four letter deal. Hey,
we also have a video games podcast called Video Games Hot Dog where you can, find us on iTunes and such.
That is a great name. That's amazing. Well, right on guys. Thank you so much for being on the show and, for just hanging out and we will look forward to this game very soon.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah. Take care. Thanks again, guys. Bye.
Bye-bye.